Welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, Nick Nat, does he deserve a week? We talk about Frio's plight and the rising stars of the season so far.
That was out of bounds! I don't believe it! I see it, but I don't believe it!
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now!
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh!
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello. It's Tuesday. It's time for the Duff and Quarters podcast. Wrapping up the weekend. It's brought to you by Tab Touch. I have with me in the studio Glenn Quartermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times. I'm Mark Duffield, the senior football writer of the West Australian. Nick Natanui, Quarters, is off to the tribunal. So is Tommy Hawkins, the umpire toucher.
Yes.
Bit to come out of the weekend's matches. Yeah. A bit to come out of West Coast's first 2 months, I think. They are now, I think, a genuine top four team. But will they have their number one ruckman when they play the Giants this weekend?
I think they will, and I think they should. I'd like to see Nick, perhaps not, is clearly in the back. I'd like to see, and that's what it was paid. Probably take a bit more care in his tackling, but I'd hate to see that ruled out of the game. I mean, what was his option to hip and shoulder? I mean, what was, did he have other options? I think tackling is a great part of the game. There are injuries do come out of it. It's a hard game. And I just hope that we, when we do draw a line, we're not changing the game irrevocably. And I really do hope that he gets off this weekend. I think there's a statement to be made. One thing before, I know you have a differing view to me, Duff, but one thing I will say before, Michael Christian suggesting that both arms were pinned, but clearly they weren't. Clearly they weren't. One arm wasn't pinned. So, I mean, you know, I think there are flaws in that argument. And they've obviously announced they are challenging, and I hope he gets off.
So I would argue he should get a week, and if he doesn't get a week, I would argue they should at least leave a fine in place. And the reason for my argument is that Nick Nat, and I don't think there's any malice. Well, actually, no, I won't say that. Nick's not a mean player, but when he tackles like this, he means to hurt. And the reality is he does what I would call the tackle bag tackle. And I've seen him do it at training, and he just flattens the tackle bag and he piles in on top of it. Now, the reality is he's driven forward and downwards, and he's driven Carl Amon's head into the dirt. Now, if you think that's acceptable, you have to also accept that if he does this 20 times, someone's going to end up on a stretcher. And if he does it 50 times, someone's going to end up in a wheelchair. And I wouldn't just refer to this one. I would take you back to round one when he tackled Nick Smith on the three-quarter time siren. If you go back and watch the replay of that, Nick Smith's head is bent almost at right angles to his body when Nick rolls over the top of him. And you ask what options he had. Well, simply don't drive him head first into the dirt.
I'm not sure if it was such head first.
Well, he's got concussion quarters.
Yeah.
And if you watch the replay, you will see his head being driven into the dirt.
Yeah.
Along on top of his body, and Nick's on top of him. You can't just have 101 or 105 kilogram monsters taking 80 kilogram midfielders head first, piling on top of them and driving them into the dirt.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it was more of a slide tackle rather than a driving his head
in. He jumped on top of him, he drove him into the dirt. That's why the umpire paid a free kick, because it was in the back. Forward, downward force. And after the game, Craig O'Donoghue and I talked about it, and we thought it was dodgy, but at that stage we weren't aware that Amon had suffered a concussion, and we thought he'd get away with possibly a fine. I would strongly urge, whatever happens tonight, whether he's cleared, fined, or the suspension stayed in place, I would strongly urge West Coast to get Nick Natanui to rethink his tackle technique. Everyone likes him hurting people like this. The crowd roars, they get up and about. I remember the roar when he did it to Smith on three-quarter time, round one, when the Eagles were coming hard at Sydney. But, mate, if someone's neck cracks when he's splatting them, and that's what he's doing, he's just splatting them. If someone's neck cracks when he's splatting them and laying all over the top of him as he drives them forward, then Nick's going to have to live with that for the rest of his life. rethink this. There is no... I don't buy the argument. In fact, I think it's bull dust. The argument that he has no option is bull dust. He doesn't have to jump on top of him and drive him headfirst into the dirt. Whether he comes off 30 paces or 2 paces, he has options. He can grab him. He can stand up. He can dispossess him of the ball. He can strip him of the ball. He can do all those things with the natural strength and size advantage he has over them. He does not have to lay on top of them and flatten them so that their head hits the dirt.
I reckon the 30 to 2 paces, there is a difference, though. I think when you have less time to make a legitimate choice. I really do believe that.
Footballers make split-second choices all the time. And, for example... Do you think Tom Hawkins should be held accountable for touching an umpire?
Well, I do, but that's a different argument.
No, it's not. Split-second choice.
Yeah, it's a different argument.
He had as much time to make that decision as Nick Natanui had to make on how he was going to execute his tackle on Carl Amon.
Yeah, I think a bit. I think he had a little bit more time.
If you think that it's okay for Nick to do that, you have to think it's okay for a player to end up on a stretcher at some point.
That's a bit of a long bay. I don't agree with that. I think there are injuries caused by consequences. It's a contact game, and that happens. I don't necessarily think... I certainly don't think there was any malice in Nick's tackle. I think there was no malice. Was there an intent to drive him into the dirt? Yes. But was there an intent to drive his head into the dirt?
Well,
no.
What's malice?
Well, I'm not sure if there was... Well, when you tackle, I mean, we're not out there with holding fairy floss stuff.
Does Nick Natanui want Carl Amon to get concussion? No.
Well, not necessarily.
Does he want to hurt him?
He wants to know he's been tackled.
He wants to hurt him.
But he wants him to know he's been tackled.
He wants to hurt him. He wants to take a yard off him. He wants to make sure that the next time Carl Amon goes for the ball, he's thinking, geez... I hope Nick Natanui's not around.
But if I was his coach...
And don't get me wrong, that's in the context of a game of footy. Every big bloke, when he gets hold of a little bloke, is thinking, I want to make a physical statement here. I want to make... And the big blokes that don't do it, the coaches are on their back saying, you had an opportunity there to make that guy know you're around. So that's the context we have to view it in. But if Nick does this 10, 15, 20 times, someone is going to get hurt. And I mean not just delayed concussion hurt. I mean on a stretcher in a neck brace.
Yeah, well, let's certainly hope that doesn't happen. But I'm of the school that...
Well, it will happen, Glenn.
Yeah, I'm not sure that there was that sling action with the head intent to drive the head in.
Quarters, go back and watch the Nick Smith tackle, because that is scarier than the Carl Amon tackle. When you see the angle Nick Smith's head is to his body when Nick rolls over the top of him, that is flat out frightening. And when I saw the replay on the night, I thought, geez, he was lucky.
Yeah, sure. I'm not arguing that point. I'm just arguing the Carl Amon point.
But this is the way he tackles. He does the... And I've seen him do it with tackle bags at training, you know. And he puts his whole body weight over the top of it and just splats it. And the problem he's got in a game is that a tackle bag doesn't have a head, but a player does. So when he splats the tackle bag and there's, you know, I've seen him do it in front of 500 people when they've had school holiday training sessions, and they all roar as Nick does it, and he goes on to the next one, because he's got great recovery and he's got great athleticism, and he builds up this thing of momentum, you know, as he's splatting these tackle bags. And that's great, but they don't have heads and they don't have spines. Players do. If he does this often enough, someone is going to get hurt.
Well, let's hope not. Let's hope not.
Well, it will. I mean, we're just playing the odds here.
I certainly hope that he can execute better. But if we're talking about the head, I'm not sure if there was intent or the action was driving the head in. It was more of a slide tackle. So I know we're never going to agree on this one, but I think I just hope that there's some element of the game left in. It's a hard contact game. And yes, we've got to protect the head. Yes, we don't want to see people with neck injuries.
It's still a contact game if Nick Nat runs 2 paces, grabs Carl Amon, holds him up, strips him of the ball, and throttles him in midair, and then puts him down and gets a free kick for holding the ball.
Yeah, that's true, but it's
still a contact game. I heard arguments last night in support of Nick Natanui because they said, Michael Christian said he could have rolled him. Oh, well, he would have risked injuring his shoulder. Well, every player that jumps on a person and takes him to ground is expected to roll him. Why is Nick Natanui any different to everybody else?
But we're not saying he is. The free kick was paid for pushing the back.
Yeah, because he didn't roll him.
Yeah, which it was a push in the back.
And he drove him into the ground head first.
There was obviously head contact, but he didn't drive him head first.
Which part of the...
drove his torso into
which part of his body hit the ground?
Well, his torso and his head.
All of him.
Yeah, well, all of him. But that's going to happen when you hit the ground. I'm just saying, I don't think he drove his head in as such.
Think his head hit the ground first?
No, I think his body... It was a body slide and the head... There was a head collision with the turf as a result of that.
So,
I'm just saying.
So every person that lays a sling tackle and
not a sling tackle. It wasn't a sling.
No, but listen. Every person who lays a sling tackle is at risk of suspension because of the risk to the head if the head hits the ground.
It's a bit of a different action, though. The sling tackle is a different action to what...
Same consequence. A player has a concussion.
Yeah, okay. The same consequence, but there are many actions in football where you can get that same consequence.
And there is a rule that governs this. It's about unreasonable force.
Yeah, look, I hate the sling tackle. I will say that. I put my hand up there, but I'm not sure if this was anywhere in that area.
Well, I would argue that there is less malice in the sling tackle than there is in a 100-kilo bloke piling on top of an 80-kilo bloke and driving him head first into the ground.
Yeah, can't agree with that one.
Well, we'll have to disagree.
Yep, no problems. Tom Hawkins...
Yeah, well, clearly he only had a split second to make that decision, so that's okay.
Yeah, well, I think he had longer than that because there was a conversation going on and the umpire was there. But I'm of the school of thought that you can't touch an umpire. Simple as that.
Well, I'm of the same. I'm just drawing the obvious double standard that you're applying to Nick and Tom Hawkins. Tom Hawkins was engaged in a bit of a scuffle with a GWS guy. Dean Maher gets a rise on the scene and he pushes him away. It's unacceptable. I think...
So I think Tom Hawkins had a lot longer to make that decision. I don't see any reference point between the two. I just think they're two completely different incidents. So.
Well, I'm just arguing that with the Nick Nat thing, that every player makes split-second decisions and we hold them accountable for them. And really, when you look at it, Tom Hawkins made a split-second decision to push at an umpire. Unacceptable. He should pay for it. What is his penalty?
I think it's a week. I don't think he gets any more than that. I'd like to see... Heath Shaw got a week. There's probably a bit more in the Heath Shaw incident, but I don't look at $5,000 to $10,000 fine. Would that suffice? No, I think the message needs to be a week. Umpires are untouchable.
I think a week and a fine.
Okay. I think just as long as the message is out there that umpires are untouchable under any circumstances.
I think that's what they did with Heath Shaw, didn't they, back in 2009 in the game against Geelong, where he basically, I think it was umpire Vozzo. And I think he sort of like, he kind of half pushes him out of the way because he wants to get involved in some sort of argument with, actually it was Tommy Hawkins.
It was too, yeah. I think there was a bit more certainly, for want of a better word, malice in the Heath Shaw than there was in the Tom Hawkins. But I still think the same result, give him a week, move on.
Malice...
Not malice, but Heath has got a very hot head out there, and I think he probably knew more of the consequences of his actions than probably Tom did at the time.
Well, it's just the statement needs to be made, doesn't it? Umpires are untouchable, and whether he gets a heavy fine or whether he gets a week or both, the result we need out of this case is that the message is reinforced all the way down through the grades from where... Tommy Hawkins plays down to under 12s, that the umpire is untouchable, the umpire has to be respected, and the umpire's status on the ground is that of a person you can't mess with.
Yep. I think it'll be interesting to see what Geelong comes up with, whether there are different camera angles of it that alert us to his direct vision of line of vision with the umpire, but I just think it doesn't really matter for mine. I just think a week will do it. So,
okay.
On to the weekend's games. Yep. I'll open the Richmond Frio one with one. We all give our votes, and that's why we have our name underneath them, and everyone's entitled to their own opinion. It's very subjective votes. But Robbie Walls, Fife, Sandy Neal. 3-2-1 for the Frio Richmond game. Just really interesting, given that they were 77-point losers.
Jeez, the rest of them must have been bad.
He did preface it by saying the next 10 would have been Richmond players, but his 3-2-1 were Fife, Sandy, and Neil. He thought those three, just the work rate and the dominance they had on their particular context, even though it didn't carry through, was such that he thought they were the three best players.
Well, I thought definitely Fife was definitely the best player on the ground. Yep. I thought he was quite phenomenal. The fact that he was actually going in and taking centre bounce hit-outs at some stage, and not just taking them, but winning them and actually
I'm not sure if I like that so much. I'm not sure if I want them to persist with that.
Well, it's kind of like taking your Ferrari cross-country, isn't it?
It is,
really?
Yeah. I'd hate to see anything happen to him. I just think at the moment it's a necessity, but I'd put that one in the bin, I think, for the time being.
Yeah, Sandilands was exceptional, and Lachie Neale was exceptional as well, but I think if you tried hard enough, you could find... I mean, Richmond's defence were absolutely outstanding. Dustin Martin was very good. I reckon you can find some Richmond players in there ahead of...
We had a bit of help, the Richmond defence, though, and he had five forwards for a lot of the game, and the way it was coming in when it did come in, they had a bit of help.
Yeah, they did. You get the feeling that maybe Freo went into this with the wrong approach, that it was basically damage limitation from the start.
It's unusual.
Yeah.
From the start, I would like to see decisions made on the run. Open with your 6-6-6, and then if things go pear-shaped within the first 20, by all means then throw another one back.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you. And they do have Fremantle doesn't have an overwhelming forward line, do they? So the last thing you want is turn a forward line that's not overwhelming into one that's very underwhelming, and that's basically what they did.
Obviously, the loss of Tabana and Walters in recent weeks hasn't helped. They were going along quite nicely, but up to that point. So, which brings us to the first question for today from Damo, is why did Freo leave an extra behind the ball when they were winning the clearances? And they did win the clearances pretty emphatically.
So they probably weren't banking on that sort of dominance around the clearances. And they probably were of a mindset to have damage limitation, which probably explains their first half, because their first half was timid and reactive and almost like they were expecting even more than what Richmond were throwing at them. You know, Nathan Wilson gets a 30-metre pass from Lachie Neale and drops the chest mark when there's no body contact. Lachie Neale and Brandon Matera have four goes at tackling Rhys Conker and make him look like Gary Ablett Sr. Rhys Conker gets up, steps out, gets grabbed, gets up, steps out, gets grabbed, steps up, gets out. Four times. Rhys Conker.
He's a good player, Rhys Conker, but he's not that good.
If Rhys Conker was at Fremantle, he would barely be in their best 22. Mm. I mean, Rhys Conker. I mean, come on. If it was Dustin Martin, you'd say, wow, that's Dustin Martin at his best. Rhys Conker, that's like, guys, tackle him. So their first half was probably close to their poorest half of the year. Their third quarter was very good, and then Richmond reasserted themselves.
Why was their third quarter so good? They had numbers back in the forward line. They had more even.
They evened the numbers up. They had, you know, good dominance coming out of the midfield still, with Fife and Sandilands and Neale playing so well, and they got their forwards to give a bit of a yelp. I reckon two of their kids' quarters played very well. I thought Andrew Brayshaw played very well, and Adam Chera played very well.
Yeah, those two.
I reckon Stephen Hill played one of the worst games I've seen him play, and David Mundy didn't have a great day either.
Yeah.
And if you don't have all of your senior players playing when you're a team in Fremantle's position and you're playing a team in Richmond's position at Richmond's favourite ground, you're in a bit of trouble.
And what'd you make of Ross Lyon's comments about the travel hurting them, and the fact that they had distractions? What's different from the previous years that they've travelled, and perhaps years where they have performed well on the road?
Well, there is an obvious distraction, isn't it? I mean, they say they're not using it as an excuse, but at some point it has to be. It's certainly a distraction at club level, and at some point that has to be a distraction at team level, and that is obviously the sexual harassment allegations swirling around Ross. So I would have thought there are distractions, and I would have thought at some point it has some effect on the team. What effect that has? I mean, we saw with Essendon in 2013 with the supplement scandal, it actually had a galvanising effect on them for a while, but it takes energy, doesn't it? It just sucks energy, because you require energy to circle the wagons and get everyone on the same page and get everyone sort of, you know, fighting against the world when you're bunkered down like that. It's not healthy, and they need to deal with this as quickly as they possibly can.
West Coast, a pretty emphatic win over Port Adelaide, and probably some concerns with Port on their very lopsided contested possession count. at this point.
Minus 40.
Yeah, not good for them. Eagles, just as you said earlier, you know, I'm not so sure they're like, for me, they're definitely making, they're playing finals. It's going to be a really interesting couple of weeks, actually, with no Shuey. We'll wait and see what happens on Nick Nat, but definitely no Shuey. It'll be an interesting few weeks, and they obviously covered Luke Shuey pretty well at the weekend because he was out early. But, you know, the Giants not travelling too well and have their own injury concerns, but they're going to get a few back this week, and it is at Spotless, somewhere where the Eagles have won in the past. But pretty impressive, the Eagles at the weekend again.
So no Shuey. Let's say Nat Nui, the suspension stays in place.
Yep.
And I'm not sure it will. I wouldn't be surprised if they downgrade it to a fine or they clear him altogether. But I do think they should at least keep the fine in place and send the message to him that this is not the way you tackle.
Well, while we're on it, there is another question from Ben from Caranup, and he's saying, Will, should the Eagles argue the hard Optus Stadium service contributed to the concussion with the Nick Nat tattle?
Well, tackle. The objective evidence we have on this is that the surface falls within the parameters of the AFL. So you can argue that.
But
I would have thought the counter-argument will be that the penetrometer says the surface falls within the acceptable parameters of the AFL.
So that'll be a no.
Yes. I think what West Coast should be doing is tapping Nick on the shoulder and saying, mate, tackle a bit differently before you hurt someone.
What I did like with the Eagles at the weekend, apart from the obvious, was the forward line getting the job. Very settled, the Eagles at the moment. Back half going beautifully. Jack Darling probably having the best season I've seen him play for many years. Another three at the weekend, keeps getting the job done. And contested marks.
Mm.
Not only these contested marks, just his presentation, and if he's not getting it, someone else is. The other thing I liked was the midfielders coming up, and Willie having a bit more of a stint and run in the middle, very impressive at the weekend.
So to do that without Luke Shuey, I think was amazing, and to go plus 32 in the first half quarters in contested ball against Ollie Wines, Travis Boak.
They're hard to do.
Robbie Gray. I'm not sure why Port didn't play Sam Pelpepper, given that he...
Yeah, very puzzling, that one.
...served his suspension. But Port are a good contested ball team. They pride themselves in that area. To really give them what was an absolute flogging, Nat Nui makes a huge difference. Scott Lysette's in career best form. Jack Redden is in career best form. Mark Hutchings steps in Dom Sheed's place. There is no hole left at all. You mentioned Jack Darling. Six contested marks, one massive climb in the goal square. How was the tackle and ball strip?
Yeah, beautiful, wasn't it? Great.
On Houston, I think it
was. And also to have the energy to go on with it and kick the goal,
kick
too.
Kick the goal, yeah.
That was very. That'll be on the highlights reel this year for sure. Kennedy, too. Four from, I think, eight possessions, was it?
Mm.
So he's getting the job done, and we know he does that. We know you give him an opportunity, he doesn't miss too often. But, you know, I mean, their forward line functioning just beautifully at the moment.
And so is their defence. I mean, they not only have Hearn and McGovern picking you off when you kick it to where they want you to kick it, and they're very good at making you kick it where they want you to kick it. They've done that. Certainly they did that to Fremantle in the Derby. They certainly did it even more so to Port Adelaide at the weekend. But if you manage to get it to where you think is a dangerous position, Brad Shepherd will be there. He'll be one-on-one, and he'll either halve the contest or he'll win it. He's in spectacular form, Brad Shepherd. He flies under the radar a bit because the other guys always get bigger numbers. But he just doesn't get beaten. He doesn't turn the ball over. He doesn't fumble. He's great in the air. He's great at ground level. He can play on a guy who's probably up to 190 centimetres, and he can play on a guy who's 175. He's a really, really good player now, Brad Shepherd.
And he's a player who was in and out of the side up until Adam Simpson arrived.
Yeah.
And after Adam Simpson, so full credit to Adam Simpson, he's put his faith in him. And I reckon he's flown under the radar for a couple of years, really. You're right, he's probably in career best form this year, but it's been a consistent performer for a couple of years now.
He was their best player quarters in the 2015 grand final debacle against Hawthorn. He was one of the guys who stood up on the big stage, in the big moment, against a red-hot opponent, and played really well.
Alex Paul, another question. Has there been a more even group of rising stars in the comp at present? No real standouts for the NAB Rising Star, and at least three youngsters all have strong claims for a nomination each week. For example, Jack Graham, Tom Cole, and Jack Henry all polled coaches' votes this week. I like Jack Henry. Slotted into that Geelong defence. Natural footballer. Reads the play, reads it really well. I did like. Oh, there is a good crop out there. Chair at Freo. Jaden Stevenson at Collingwood
has done nothing. Jaden Stevenson. Oh.
Yeah, he's a ripper. Aaron Norton, Western Bulldogs. But for me, Cameron Rayner looks like he's running into some blistering form. It was a good last quarter too.
How was that 10-minute burst that Rayner put on in the last quarter of that Brisbane-Collingwood match?
Not a bad game, that one.
Game of the round.
18-17.
I know Sydney-North Melbourne was closer, but for me, just the freewheeling, the scoring, but still the presence of pressure and strong physical pressure while scores were being...
18 goals to 17, and you wouldn't know from Nathan Buckley afterwards, just didn't like it much from where we sat. Well, I can tell you, everyone else in the footy world who watched the game loved it. It was just goal for goal.
Don't you love coaches? He looked like he'd just eaten a poo sandwich, didn't he? Just bitten into some
reckon he'd be happy, because I reckon at this stage of the year, just those games, just to bank the 4 points, is going to be so important later on.
And the other distinction to make, I've heard Adam Simpson say this a couple of times about West Coast. A couple of years ago, we would have lost that game. And he said on the weekend again, you know, when Port came at them, kicked 5 goals in a row, yep, got to within 25 points, he said a couple of years ago, I'm not sure we would have been able to arrest that momentum. I reckon last year and the year before, Collingwood loses that game,
yep,
to Brisbane.
I agree, yeah.
And just to find a way to win, Jordan De Goey, what a game he played,
yeah,
as well. He's
five goals. Yeah, he's a ripper. Out of contract too. I think I'd like to see him stay at Collingwood. Who knows what's going to happen there? I think logic tells me he will, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, you take a risk with the off-field issues with Jordan.
Well, they've looked after him. He's been looked after.
So you hope he stays put.
But he's a good player.
And puts back. Big man, loves the moment.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing, and we often whinge about this in Western Australia, out of sight, out of mind, we think our great players are discounted. Dane Beams, when he's fit, just constantly reminds you of what a class player he was. Mm. How was him stepping up and kicking that goal in, yep, the last quarter from 52 metres? And you know what? I was sitting at home watching that on the couch with my wife, and I said to her at the time, like, Sharon wouldn't know Dane Beams from a bar of soap. Mm. I said to her, I said, he'll kick this. You know, he's a class player. He will kick this. And sure enough, it never looked like missing. He just stepped up and slotted it.
I reckon one of the better teams in recent years not to have won a game at this point of the year, I reckon, Brisbane.
Yeah, absolutely.
Won a lot of fans. And they're obviously going in the right direction. They'll start winning games soon.
Well, it doesn't really matter if they don't.
Not really. Not really. No.
If they're giving that sort of effort at home in front of their fans, unless you're a completely deranged feral, you're going to walk away from that and you're going to say, geez, how good was Rayner in the last quarter? You know, how good was McStay taking those couple of big marks?
The only thing I'll say is that I think from the player's point of view, it is good to have Banker win every now and then, just to sing the song and to know that you're on the right track. If you keep losing every week, there can be some self-doubt creep in. So I'd like to see them just get one.
You know what you least. Do? You know what you do, Quarters? You do the trick. It's a little mental trick, and Sheeds did it with GWS.
Yep.
You don't have a 22-game season. You have an 88-game season. And you put it up on the board, and it's quarter by quarter.
Yep.
And you mark down your wins and losses,
yep,
quarter by quarter. And then you have a look at how you're performing there. And you award yourself so many points for winning a quarter and so many points for
losing a quarter.
It's a good idea. And that gives you a far better indication as to your progress and how often and for how long you are competing strongly.
Still nice to sing the song, though.
Yes.
Every now and then. Anything else catch your eye over the weekend? Melbourne's performance caught my eye. I think they're on the way.
Yeah.
Winning games that they – you talked about Collingwood at the Gabba. Winning games they should win,
yep,
that in the past they wouldn't have. Building something now, Melbourne, I reckon. I reckon the second half of the – well, certainly it's not we're approaching the halfway mark, but I think Melbourne plays finals for mine.
So we talk about contested ball as the foundation stone.
Number one.
Of your brand. And Melbourne wins contested ball every week.
Yep.
So you've got to be happy with that. Just as a starting point, I think we've both felt at times they've been disorganised. And we felt against Cawthorn in particular, Goodwin got outcoached by Alistair Clarkson, but he won't be the first or last man to be outcoached by Alistair Clarkson. So
you know what I really like about Melbourne is their forward line too. We can talk about their midfield, Olivers and these players and Viney to come back in. But McDonald and Hogan, two big blokes. Hogan can play more midfield size too, but two big blokes who, geez, they their aerobic capacity. They get around, don't they? So you're playing on them as a defender with a bit of height. You're going to be exhausted at the end of those four quarters.
So did you like Jesse's swan dive? And should he have?
I thought they both erred. I didn't like it, no. Got away with it. I think they both got it pretty wrong, to be quite frank. I didn't like the action and I didn't like the reaction.
I haven't seen the angle that shows how hard
wasn't much in it, mate.
Jake Carlo pushes him.
Not much in it. Yeah. Not much in it. But Jake's, you know, needs to look at his actions there. And I don't think it's Jesse's finest moment, but he had a good game, so he can get away with that one.
And he missed the shot.
So he did too, which is probably
just footy god.
Mate, it's karma, mate. The karma bus always gets you. It does.
Now, your boy James Sicily.
Yeah, look, it was a great game from him.
Couple of brain fades, comes back, takes 14 marks, 29 possessions, dominant performance.
Yeah,
cross halfback.
He's it's funny, you know. You speak to Hawthorn supporters, and he frustrates, but there's a growing love for him. And when he comes up with performances like those at the weekend, you really know, you know, building into a very special player who'll be the cornerstone of the Hawthorn defence for a long time. And you can see why Clarko has put such faith in him. He probably reminds him a bit of himself, actually. Yeah. I don't think Clarko minds missing a week or two. He likes the passion. That obviously has to be harnessed, but you can't. You've got to have some passion to play the game on that edge.
He also has been known to hit an unsuspecting opponent from behind. Yeah, Alistair Clarkson.
Yeah, he has. During a exhibition game,
the Battle of Britain, circa 1987,
yeah,
I believe.
I don't know what that was about. I still don't. Years later. Yeah, look, Hawthorn too. Getting the job done, nothing special. I keep saying it, but very gettable. And but to Essendon, again, third terms. What are they? Minus 136 in third terms this year.
Yeah, that's amazing. Joe Danaher, whether he's injured or whether he's just out of form.
Move him. Play. I'd play him. I'd just keep playing him, but I'd just give him a spell somewhere else.
Interesting point that I think a few people are making, which I think is very valid. They have two roll-off zone defenders.
They do.
Brendan Goddard and Michael Hurley.
So you've got to choose one, don't you?
Well, surely Goddard is the better ball user and Hurley is the better physically equipped to play man-on-man. So surely Hurley becomes a man-on-man defender and bodies up the nearest big opponent to him, and Goddard is the one you allow.
Yeah, I would like to see that.
You'd also like to see Brendan Goddard, and I think there was a couple of instances highlighted where he had to get in a contest and then had to have a follow-up effort and didn't make it. This is the bloke that was berating others for their efforts a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, he was standing the wrong side of the pack a couple of times with his direct opponent. And his direct opponent, i.e. Jared Ruffhead, was able to get some pretty easy angles to goal.
Yeah, well, I think when you talk the talk, you got to walk
you
the
do.
Walk,
yep.
AJ.
Absolutely.
Quarters, I loved Mason Wood's game for North Melbourne.
North Melbourne, probably the team of the season so far, if you look at where they've come from, which is from nowhere. Everyone, and myself included, picked them to finish on the bottom of the ladder. There's no way they're finishing near the bottom of the ladder now.
Just as a follow-on to what you just said, is Brad Scott the coach of the year so far?
Absolutely. I reckon he is. I won't say daylight second, but some distance second.
Yeah, he's coaching absolutely magnificently. Wood's always been a talented player, but because of injuries and a few other maybe effort sort of based issues, has never quite put it all together. The Swans can't win at home.
One from four this year. Mm. So, yeah, they can't. They can't. And so you'd like to get them there now.
So what's going on there? They're still a contested ball team, but they do have some smaller bodies now. It's not that across-the-board big-body player that just comes at you and smashes you.
And they're not as a contested team as they were.
Yeah.
They're slowing down a bit. They're getting beaten more often in contested possession now. So obviously there's a direct correlation between that and the SCG.
Okay. Now what about the review? So North Melbourne gets a goal at one point.
Oh, you're with Hartung?
When the ball is touched.
Yeah.
I think it was McVeigh, was it? McVeigh got a hand on it?
Yeah, he did, the Hartung kick, yeah.
And it's not reviewed in time before it goes back to the centre. Now, here's the suggestion, which makes a fair bit of sense, that we stop trying to work out whether someone's got a finger on the ball and we just look at the goal line and see what's happened there.
Yeah, I think that's fair because there would have been thousands of kicks that would have been touched and not paid, and there would have been thousands of kicks that weren't touched that went the other way as well. So that were paid touch. I just think, yeah, I agree with that. If it's 40 out, someone looks like they get a finger on it, wasn't called. The umpire didn't call it touch, so it's a goal if it crosses the goal line.
So we just accept that the field umpire or the goal umpire, from what he sees, will make the call as to whether it's been touched before it crosses the line.
That's right, yeah.
And then if there is any doubt as to whether it's crossed the line or not, then that is for the goal umpire to call for a
review. That's what the review is there for, really. I mean, I don't think it's there for a field. That's the field umpire's job. And I think if it's uniform, then people can't complain about it.
Yeah,
you're going to get one not go your way. You're going to get one go your way. It's just the way it is. Like Mike Hussey, when you're never walking.
Yeah,
I've edged plenty, you know, when I wasn't given out, and I've been given out when I didn't touch it. So
you did.
What? No, I'm just saying this is not me. I always
this is Mike Hussey's.
Mate, I wasn't good enough to get the edge. Mike Hussey's theory is that, you know, I've been given out too many times when I didn't hit it to walk.
You know what? I got given not out once in a country cricket match where the other team were adamant that I'd nicked it and I didn't think I'd nicked it.
So were you given out?
Given not out.
Okay, well, good.
Made 50, we won the match.
Well done.
They were even less happy after that.
Well, you didn't touch it.
So, all right, so big game, big round of fixtures coming up this week. Yep. Of course, Fremantle back at home to St Kilda. Big chance to get their fourth win of the season. Hopefully they get Michael Walters back. We'll know more about that in the coming days.
Is that a chance? I would have thought that would be a very outside chance.
They talked kneecap and they said that he was a chance. Before last weekend, they said he was a chance to play against the Saints. So we'll watch that unfold in the coming days. West Coast away to GWS. As you mentioned, they have won at the ground before, and we await to see whether they have Nick Natanui available. They won't have Luke Shuey available. That looked like a reasonably significant.
And I reckon they're getting a few back too. I think Kelly's a very good chance. I think Lobb's a very good chance. I'm not sure about Green.
See, Toby Green's the key to them, really.
I think he's still in the mix. He's in the mix, getting a few back this week, and I can probably sniff. They need a win, GWS. They need a statement this week, and it's at home.
I just think they need to muddle their way through this part of the season and get themselves into position to make a run. One thing that's starting to emerge is there's more question marks about their strength and conditioning and their preparation, because this is now an 18-month
string of
these injuries.
There are. And while we're at it, another soft tissue at Adelaide too, the weekend, Malera.
Yeah.
Another one.
Yeah.
There's eight.
Was it a tear or was it awareness?
or a hamstring awareness. I'm aware I have a hamstring.
Mind you, Tex Walker would be barely aware he's got a leg, let alone a hamstring. Glenn, thank you for joining us this morning for Tab Touch. Thank you for having the argument with me about Nick Natanui.
Thank God we don't agree on everything, Duff.
Yes, I know.
Boring.
Yeah, it would be. We'll be back on Thursday with the tips for the round coming up, and hope to talk to you then.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.